For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
These days, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries. And with that, we sent away good jobs and our capability to make things. American Giant is a clothing company that's pushing back against this tide. They make all kinds of high-quality clothing and activewear, like sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more, right here in the USA. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs in towns and cities across the country. And jobs bring pride. Purpose. They stitch people together. If all that sounds good to you, visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20.
Welcome, welcome, ladies, gentlemen, fanatics of all ages, to the only podcast predicted to win 83 games by Pecota. This is Phillies Therapy, the 2024 Phillies season preview edition. It's here. It's our third season. It's the Phillies 140-something-ith season. They've been around a lot longer than we have. And they should be very good this year. Again, this should result in a third straight trip to the postseason. This should result in serious championship contention. Should is a very dangerous word. But right now, hope springs eternal. Things look great. It's a little cloudy here in the Northeast. It might rain tomorrow, opening day. Schedules might get shifted around. It doesn't matter. Don't let that dim your optimism. This is a good baseball team you root for, or are at least tangentially interested in if you are listening and not a Phillies fan. Hello, welcome. This is the outset of what should be another fun season. I know it didn't really have the import of star power that the last few off seasons have had. I know it didn't really have a big, new, shiny star trade acquisition or something signature from the old Dave Dombrowski days. Haven't really had that. I get that. Bringing back a lot of the same team from last year. Well, guess what? Last year's team was two offensive fumbles away from going back to the World Series. So you know what? That's cool by me. But we've got some things to talk about. This season's not going to play out exactly like it did last year. Never does. No two seasons are alike. They're like snowflakes. And I can't talk about all this alone. So joining me, as always, from The Athletic, the pride of Central Bucks West, Mr. Matt Gelb himself. Matt, welcome back from your second trip to Florida. How are you?
Pretty good. Also, I would lay some blame on Craig Kimbrell for the NLCS.
Well, yeah, I'm trying not to bury the guy too much. He had a good year. I don't want to lose like the good regular season by dumping.
No, no doubt. But I mean, that was like, yeah. I mean, it wasn't all on the offense. Yeah,
he did. He did.
What if I told you this is a great segue into
I love when things start like this. Okay.
What if I told you that there was an NLCS in which the Phillies chased 37%. Of pitches out of the zone. They swung at 37% of pitches out of the zone. And there was a series in NLCS where they swung at 32% of the pitches out of the zone. Guess what? The one with the higher chase rate was in 2022.
You got me. I did not know that. No.
And so like a narrative formed, and rightfully so. I mean, those five games against the Diamondbacks, they chased. But there are all these little narratives we've been trying to tell ourselves about this team, you know, since the NLCS ended and the bitter way that it ended. And I think we saw the way the front office and the team treated this offseason without, like you were alluding to, major changes, big acquisitions. And I think that should tell you something. And they're not always right about everything. Of course not. They make a lot of mistakes. But they've had a decent track record in judging these things in the last few years. And I do think that does give them a little benefit of the doubt, given how this team has been run since Dave Dombrowski took over and changed some things. And their action or inaction this offseason should tell us quite a bit, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And I agree with it. I think that's the thing. I don't feel antsy or anxious about the fact that there wasn't a lot of turnover, that there wasn't a lot of shuffling of the deck, right? Because this is a really good baseball team. And they're coming into this season healthy again, for the most part. You know, the dings and dents that they have or that they're bringing into the start of the year here are relatively minor. You know, they didn't just lose their starting first baseman for the entire season a week before opening day. You know, we're not talking about that kind of thing that really rocks the boat. They're returning their regulars. They have a new opening day center fielder who we will talk about, I am sure, multiple times throughout the early part of this year. They're returning most of their rotation and have high hopes for, you know, some of the guys within that, basically all of them. They have a really good bullpen. Talk a little bit more about that in a second. Really, a lot of it hinges on, and this has been a common theme, a lot of it hinges on health. Every team needs to be healthy. Sure. You want your best players out there as much as you can. You look at the Braves last year, how many of their position players stayed healthy throughout the year. That was an incredible run of good injury luck. The Phillies don't really have a whole lot in terms of cavalry and any part of the minors, really, right
no,
now.
No, and that right. And that was what we going into the spring, we were like, what is the spring about? It's about extending Zach Wheeler. They did that. Mm-hmm. And it's about sorting through the sort of inventory, the depth that they might have to call upon during the season. And what did we learn this spring? Not much. I mean, like you said, there were very few injuries, you know, Taiwan Walker's shoulder aside. And I do think that's less of an injury and more of a lack of preparedness. You know, I think you'll see him sometime in early May. I think position player wise, like they sent out two guys near the end of camp who I think will help them and, you know, are decent call-ups, both from each side of the plate. Left side, Cody Clemens, mm-hmm. you know, strong camp. You know, is he's not an everyday guy in the major leagues, obviously. Is he a solid bench guy in the big leagues if you need him? I think so. Mm-hmm. Right from the right side, Weston Wilson.
Yep.
Again, solid, you know, like a guy that you're happy to call up, probably not play every day, obviously, in the majors, but a guy who gives you some depth. They're very happy with both of those. They have two outfielders, left and right hitters. David Dahl, Jordan Luplo, they signed both of them during the spring. Both are going to AAA. Solid depth. Pitching-wise, like, I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, Dave Dombrowski, at numerous times this spring, was hyping up Tyler Phillips, who I don't exactly see it. I've heard people who like it, other people from other organizations. You know, he might be their like number seven starter right now because their number six starter, Spencer Turnbull, is in the rotation to begin. And, you know, I guess if you're mining for depth, I mean, we have to mention Turnbull because he was depth and now he is in the rotation. And right. I have no idea what to expect from him. It was a decent camp, but we'll see. Like, I'm not convinced that there's going to be enough strikes, but I think there is certainly things to be intrigued by and interested by. You know, the other depth guys were just okay in the spring. Colby Allard, Max Castillo.
Nick
Nelson. Nick Nelson's going to be a reliever this year. They're moving him back to the bullpen, Triple A.
Okay.
You know, the reliever depth is just okay. You know, like, I would have probably carried Jose Ruiz over Connor Brogdon. I get why they didn't. Brogdon's out of options that, you know, maybe when Orion Kirkland comes back on April 9th, that's when the DFA Brogdon tried to get him through waivers. Also, Connor is not a traditionally good spring performer, and he admitted it. He's like, I don't think I've ever thrown a pitch 95 in spring in my life. So, you know, they just buy a little more time, and I guess they get to see what it looks like. But he's pretty much the last guy in the staff, I think. So there's some depth. I think we learned that this spring. There's not a lot, but there's some. And if there's a cluster of injuries, they're probably screwed.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Okay, right. So let's start with the pitching unit, right? Let's take a look at this roster. We'll start with the rotation. Okay, it's pretty straightforward by now. You know the names. Just mentioned one of them. The others, I think you're probably familiar with them. Zach Wheeler is going to start opening day. He breaks Aaron Nola's opening day start streak. Nola will fill in right behind him. Then Ranger Suarez, Christopher Sanchez in a full-time starting role, we presume. And then for now, Spencer Turnbull in the five slot awaiting the return of Taiwan Walker, as you said, probably sometime in May if things continue to go well. It is a good rotation This is a good set of starting pitchers. The question is, how long are they going to be on the mound to show that talent? It's not really a question of whether Zach Wheeler or Aaron Nola can pitch a lot this year. They've done that multiple times before recently, each of the last couple of years.
Your fingers. It's hard to see it working, you know, without them making at least 50 combined starts, right? I mean, I'm counting that. That would be low for both.
Minimum.
25 apiece, minimum 50 starts.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you get into the lefties. Ranger Suarez, absolute fan favorite for numerous reasons, rightfully so. Has never reached, what was it, 175 innings, I think, was what we were looking at to be his benchmark.
160-something is his high.
Yeah, yeah. So he has not put in a full, capital F, full season as a starting pitcher. Chris Sanchez, the same to an even greater degree. And then Turnbull, who, you know, will only take a couple of turns in the rotation before getting replaced. Matt, a week or two ago, we talked about the number of innings that a rotation could be expected to cover. You have five, sometimes six, starting pitcher slots. And over the course of a season, you expect them to cover roughly, what, 900 innings spread between those five spots, with a combination of players filling in for each of the five spots. And you look at those names and you think, okay, you can lean on Wheeler and Nola. You have to lean on Wheeler and Nola for those 180 inning shares and maybe a couple more. Where things start to get dicey is you wonder how much Ranger, Christopher, and Spencer/Taiwan can put up for their part. Do we think that this is maybe a bigger concern than it's been made out to be, that things are holding on by a thinner thread?
This is where the Phillies hold an advantage over the Braves, a distinct advantage, I think.
Because
after Spencer Strider and Max Fried, the Braves have depth. They have some minor leagues, you know, younger starters who are going to AAA who are probably going to factor in for them. But after Strider and Fried, you have Charlie Morton and Chris Sale and Reynaldo Lopez, and all three of them could be quite good. And all three of them, I think, come with even bigger questions, I think, than some of the Phillies guys. I do. Mm-hmm. Like, I think the Wheeler, Nola, Suarez triumvirate is as good of a top three in rotation as there is in baseball. Agree?
It's really good. Yeah. No, it's really good.
And to me, the biggest development of the spring, other than extending Zach Wheeler, was Ranger Suarez having, and not even, I'm not even talking about the ERA. He has a zero ERA and a great, really great. It could have been, you know, again, we talked about this. It could have been a 5 ERA, a 6 ERA. It doesn't matter. Like the fact that he is fully prepared is, you know, stuff looks good. And like he's ready to go to begin the season and has a legitimate chance of making 32 starts this year. That is a huge development for the Phillies. And so I think Chris Sale was a really interesting acquisition by the Braves. I don't know. Like, how many starts are Charlie Morton and Chris Sale going to make? I don't know. Reynaldo Lopez hasn't been a starter in years. And yeah, you've got the Waldrips and the Smith Shawvers and the Bryce Elders behind them. And that's better depth than the Phillies have. I think that's pretty clear. So I do think this is the one area where the Phillies have an advantage. And I do think Christopher Sanchez, like, he might be good. he might be good. I mean, he's definitely going to be a decent fifth starter. And I guess, you know, obviously he's their four now. And he might be good. You know, he's added velocity and we'll see how, you know, if he can command it. He showed command of it. Other than the changeup this spring, I think the changeup is, that's the thing to watch with him, because he is throwing a little harder and like the command wasn't necessarily there, and he added the cutter and then his changeup started cutting a little bit and that was an issue. So that's something to watch. But I think the middle of the Phillies rotation, if we're counting it as Suarez and Sanchez, gives them an advantage over most teams. And I think the Braves included. Now the Braves have advantages over the Phillies in many other spots. So
sure. The thing that gets me and the thing I keep coming back to is, and this is not to obviously slight the Braves because they do have a really terrific team. They really do. They brought back a lot of the same team that won, you know, over 100 games last year. They're doing kind of what the Phillies did.
The bullpen is much better. And that was a priority for them.
Yeah. I mean, look, anything I say that goes against that is just, it's mitigated by the fact that the underlying talent is almost excessive. Like, this is a really good team. But, I think there is more room for the Braves to fall back maybe as much room for the Braves to fall back as there is for the Phillies to take a step forward. A lot of the projections, again, those are only just projections, and you look at them and they have a nice frame of reference. Okay, that's great. A lot of the projection systems don't really like the Phillies that much this year. They don't. They have, depending on which one you look at, anywhere from 83 to 86 wins on the season, which is obviously a significant step back from 90. But I look at this team compared to last year's team, and I think about the start they got off to as a unit and individually. Obviously, you can look at Trey Turner for his first 4 months, but you also think about this team missing Bryce Harper for a month and change. You think about this team missing Ranger Suarez for a month and change. You think about the way that they were five games under 500 at the end of May and were still able to turn it around and win 90 games in spite of that. That's not an easy feat. But they won 90 games after that slow start because of the talent that they are bringing back onto this year's roster. It's a lot of the same guys. They're not going to have Craig Kimbrel, regular season Craig Kimbrel, but the bullpen is still very good, and the bullpen was a large part of why they were so good in the middle of the summer. I think if the rotation stays healthy, for the most part, you know there's going to be, you know, guys who have to rest, or there's going to be turns into a six-man rotation. I am sure that there are going to be different configurations, and everybody we just talked about isn't going to, you know, we're already talking about splitting time between Spencer Turnbull and Taijuan Walker. But the other four guys are not all going to make 30 starts. Stipulated. Just going to put that out there. But I think that those arms leading the way give this team, and all being intact at the start of the year, give this team a chance to really get off to a nice start and not let Atlanta just kind of coast from the end of May, basically, on through the end of the year. It all hinges on the rotation. It really does for me. I get that there's more star power in the lineup. I get that there's maybe a little more intrigue, especially with how some of these stories came out over the last week about projections on the other side of the coin, really liking the bullpen. I still think the rotation is the linchpin here. And if Ranger and Sanchez, like you were just talking about, if they can make it to set an arbitrary number, if Ranger can make his 170, 175 innings, if Sanchez can make it to 150. Be a little more conservative, yeah, 140, 150. I think this team is in a really, really good spot. But that's the key. The rotation, this unit, the guys who are going to fill in for those five spots that need to sum up to 180 or so innings each, they are my key.
Yeah, and for that reason, I think the projection, when you look at some of the projection systems and how it looks at the NL East, for example, I'm just going to focus on the East. I think they're giving too much credit to the Marlins and Nationals and probably too much credit to the Braves, because I think the Braves are really good, but they're projected again for high 90s, and it's hard to win 97 games every year. Like, no matter how good your team is, like, shit happens. And, like, you know, like the Marlins right now, their rotation is just an absolute clown show.
It's a mess.
Old friend Sixto Sanchez made the team. He's going to be a middle reliever, probably their closer, I bet, by June, if he actually is back, I think.
Yeah, that's right.
The Nationals were, and like the number three stars right now for the Marlins, for example, we're talking about the third star, Ranger Suarez, how I think he stacks up. Just for comparison's sake, the Marlins' number three star right now is Ryan Weathers. The Nationals' third starter is Jake Irvin, or Mackenzie Gore, I guess. I think both of those teams, like, for example, on the Fangraphs projections, they have the Marlins at 80 wins. I think that is extremely optimistic.
That's aggressive. Yeah.
I think even the Nationals at 66 wins is extremely optimistic. I do. And like the Braves, I think could very still well win this division with 94, 93. They're projected for 97 at Fangraphs. So Phillies are at 85 on Fangraphs. We'll get to where we think they are later on in this podcast. Sure. But I think you can point to specific reasons where you're like, okay, like, I can see why the projections did it this way. I also think that there are real reasons to, you know, wonder if just a few things going differently change those projections.
Yeah, you know, there are things, there are black box proprietary things that happen with projection systems that we don't really need to go into that. And again, these things are just frameworks. It's not exactly how a season is going to go. It's a best guess. But you look at some of these things, and I'll pick on Fangraphs just for a second. You know, Bryce Harper is expected to put up a really low defensive value component, whereas right. all we've heard right now is, you know,
not just and seen.
Is he's really taken to the position well for somebody who has barely played it and is immediately jumping into it at the major league level. So, you know, a little bit of anecdotal versus, and again, this projection system, all it has to go on is what it has seen from a data perspective.
Yes. And the Phillies are continuously, and rightfully so, in previous years, dinged for their defensive projections.
Yes.
This will be a better defensive team, like by a lot. And I think that that is the reason when I've been asked, I'm doing all these radio shows and podcasts and like, you know, why are they going to be better? It sounds ridiculous, but I think it's because of the defense. Like it is going to be, it is going to be a big deal. I think it's going to be a big deal. I don't think they're going to be the best defensive team in baseball. I don't even think they're going to be a top 10 defensive team in baseball, but they're not going to be among the last five or six, which is what they've been for a long time. They're going to be solid. They're going to be right around league average. And that's going to make a big difference with the pitchers they have.
I mean, just think about this from, I hate to keep picking on Schwarber, but just think about this from a Kyle Schwarber perspective alone, right? You see that both in, you know, getting him off his feet late last year, the thought that Brandon Marsh could be your regular left fielder. And even on days that he has to either shift to center or gets a day off, they're carrying Christian Pache in a bit of a surprise on the bench. So now you have two really, really good light hitting, but good defensive outfielders that should provide immediate lift, especially late in games. If you remove Schwarber's defensive capabilities from the equation, that's a big lift, especially as it relates to a projection system that looks at what he has put up over the last couple of years as a left fielder. And you take that away. You know, this is a guy who might only start a couple of times a month out in the field just to keep his legs loose. Yeah. You know, if you improve your defense by that much at one position, you're going to see a lift. And maybe that's just something that hasn't been accounted for yet. There are things that we see as fans that just are incongruous with the way some of these systems look at it. And it can go both ways at the end of a season, right? Either the system could be like, oh, okay, they saw something, or they understood something in aging or the way this guy's numbers have been put up that actually bore out to be true. Or we could be like, well, hey, he's been making improvements, or he tweaked his swing, or he's been working with this coach on this thing. And that is what bears improvements and actually flips the script on the projections. That's why these things are just projections. And you'll hear people say that a lot. But I think it's important to look at these numbers and say, oh man, why does this thing think the Phillies are only going to win 84 games? They're going to drop back six games? How's that possible? They're returning so much of the same roster. And my counter to that is, I do think that is being conservative. And I do think that these systems are looking at some of the performances of the past couple of years without really properly, may not be the right word, maybe a little unfair, but without properly forecasting the changes that are actually being made. Harper going to first base full time, new position, yes, small sample as far as projection calculations are concerned, for sure. But we've seen, and we are being told, that things are probably going to go better than that. Then you don't even get into Bryson Stott, what he could do at second base. Maybe he got even better. Who knows? If Alec Bohm stays steady and Trey Turner stays steady, a full season of Johan Rojas in center field, Martian left, like we were just talking about, Castellanos and right, well, you know, okay. That's a good defensive lineup before you even talk about the catcher who's won multiple gold gloves. And so I think this is something that really just needs to be brought up as a counter to, oh man, this team's defense isn't going to be great, and that's really what's going to hold them back. That's kind of a straw man argument. But if that's what's being put forward, I think we're going to see some things run in the opposite direction in a good way.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. And there's a lot of ifs, and like you have to factor all that. But on the way that they use the depth charts on Fangraphs, by the way, like the way they project left field, for example, they have Brandon Marsh getting 231 of the 700 plate appearances in left field. They have him playing a bunch of center field too.
Okay.
Yeah, but they have Schwarber out there for about 30 starts, essentially, like 126 plate appearances.
It's about one a week or so. Yeah.
I don't think that's going to be the case. And like, and on his projection, like he's obviously dinged big time for his fielding, and that knocks down the projections there. So there's these little things, but yeah, I don't know where I'm going with this.
No, that's
I mean, it. I think, you know, you asked me a couple weeks ago, like, you know, what percentage odds I gave the Phillies to win the division. And I'm way above, you know, I didn't think it was a ridiculous number. Like I thought it was low, even like saying 20%. Right. Because, and my reasoning was that I don't think any team should be 90% to win the division in any given year. And that, you know, that is essentially where the Braves are at this point. Are they not? I mean, that's, what does FanGraphs have them?
They're pretty
88.8% to win the division.
They're pretty locked in.
I think they're really good. I think it's very hard to have a 90% chance to win your division before a season starts. Even, you know, no matter who you are, it's just hard. It's hard to win a division every year. And yeah, I mean, the FanGraphs gives the Phillies 7% to win the division. I said 20, probably too high, but I don't think it's like a crazy high number.
You know, I just look at it through the obviously rose colored or maroon and powder blue colored glasses that I need to as a Phillies fan, and just think of it as a collective comparison. And do I think it is more likely that more of the Phillies lineup, and we're shifting gears here into the lineup very smoothly, that more of the Phillies lineup will perform at or even slightly above last year's totals than the Braves will set another record for home runs? Do I think it's more likely? Yeah. I think there's more room to fall back when you set the bar that high. There just is. Like, could the Braves go out and hit 320 homers this year? Yeah, I guess. Do I think that's as likely as Trey Turner having a better full season? No. Apples to oranges, but you get what I'm getting at. I think there's more room for the Phillies to improve, which makes their ceiling higher. And I think there's more room for the Braves to fall back, bringing them back into the mid-90s. And hell, if I think the Phillies have a 94-win talent team and the Braves fall back to 96, well, hell, that sounds like an exciting September to me. You know, that's all it takes.
I mean, I think both teams, had pretty good injury luck last year. All things considered, and Phillies lost Rhys Hoskins and the Braves had some rotation issues during the year, but all things considered, both teams had pretty good injury luck last year. And it could truly come back down to that again this year. I was like, who will be the healthiest team? And that's such a cop out. I hate that, I know, but I do think that will play a big role in it. And we saw, like, you know, how did the Phillies beat the Braves, or what was one of the biggest reasons why the Phillies beat the Braves again in the postseason last year? And it was velocity, right? And it's funny because what did the Braves go get for their bullpen, or what did they prioritize this offseason? It was velocity. I mean, they picked up,
especially from the left side. Yeah.
Especially from the left side. I mean, Aaron Bummer, I think, was a big acquisition for them. And I think every time the Braves play the Phillies this year, you're probably going to see Aaron Bummer in the game. Yeah. The Braves have a lead. And, probably facing Kyle Schwarber and Bryce Harper. And, you know, Tyler Matzek is back, and we'll see what kind of form he's in. But he was so good for them, you know, before he got hurt. So they went and got velocity. And it's funny because that is exactly, I mean, there's a reason why the Phillies now have, like, you know, the bullpen was projected, right? You know, everyone's been talking about this week. It's like, because the bullpen is projected, you know, by FanGraphs Warren and by other people now to be, you know, the best bullpen in baseball. I don't think it's the best bullpen in baseball. Do you?
That's such a muddy thing. I'm clinging on to this projection because it's so wild to me that 4 years removed from the Workman Hembry Express, we have a unit that looks like this good, you know, the Ian Kennedy era. Like, it was so bad for a good number of years, and now it's like, within less than 5 years, they're saying, oh no, actually now it's one of the best units. It's a crazy turnaround, regardless of whether they actually finish as the best. But I do think they are one of the I can't pull every unit off the top of my head right now, but I would put them in the top, what, like quarter of teams in the league, conservatively, just because of the pure stuff.
And that's, so that's why. So last year, Paul, the Phillies relievers threw more pitches at 95 or harder than any other bullpen in baseball. In fact, they threw 1,966 more fastballs at 95 plus than the Braves did. The Braves had the third fewest 95 plus fastballs out of their bullpen. And you're like, okay, well, what, you know, what did teams do against it? I mean, like, and the numbers were really good. I mean, like the 239 with a 365 slug against Philly's fastballs, bullpen fastballs at 95.
Right.
That's pretty good.
It is.
Now everyone's been like, how did they get here? Like, how did they get here? And there's a clear moment in time. It's when Dave Dombrowski gets hired. And if you just do a, you know, how did they get better? How did the Phillies make their bullpen better from 2020, which was, you know, a hilariously bad year. And it was, a, you know, it was a smaller sample because it was a short season, but
sure.
Here it is. This is very simple. This is what it is. In 2020, the Phillies' average fastball velocity from their bullpen was 92.5 miles an hour.
92.
The Phillies' average fastball velocity from the bullpen last year, 95.7. Wow. More than 3 miles an hour on average.
On average.
And when Dombrowski's first season, 2021, the average fastball velocity went up 2 miles an hour to 94.6. It went up to 95.1. And then last year, 95.7. In 2020, this is what hitters did against Phillies' fastballs, 95 plus. 317 batting average with a 590 slug.
590?
That's bad.
That's not great.
But simply, very simply put, the Phillies have targeted velocity and they have acquired hard throwing pitchers and made them better, gotten them in the zone more. And that is how they have built what is one of the better bullpens, maybe the best, probably not, one of the better bullpens at baseball. And I don't want to make it that simple, but I think it is. When you throw harder, your margin for error is just a little bigger. And especially late in games, you know, when you're able to match up a little better left on right, you know, or left on left, right on right. And I think it explains a lot about where they are now. And you know, what they've done, you know, implementing this pitching program, it's done well.
You know, we talked about injury luck, and one of the guys who was on the shelf for a bit last year was Jose Alvarado. And he's another guy who, if he manages to put together a full season, which is in question because he hasn't really done that. But if he puts together a full season, this is now one of the very top arms across the entire game. They have been able to fix whatever ailed him in Tampa Bay command-wise. Some of it dealt with scrapping his curveball, but they've really just been able to get him unleashed, right? Whether it was just like JT setting up in the middle of the plate and telling him, all right, just throw the cutter
basically,
and I'll catch it, you know, like that sort of thing. And he is incredible. If he is healthy, he is unreasonable. He only logged 40-some innings last year. So you get a couple more innings out of Alvarado, and you know, that's another thing you can add into the equation. Then you think about Jeff Hoffman, who had an incredible year, total breakout, a decade after being drafted, looked great really the entire year. He was a top weapon, stayed great into the postseason. If those fixes are real, and at this point, after an entire season of looking like that, basically, there's very little reason to think they're not real.
The hardest unit to project. Yeah, it's so hard because it's like, I don't think Jeff Hoffman's going to be as good as he was last year. I think he'll still be a really good setup man for them. But it's like, you know, relievers are just like, what do you do? Well, it's so hard to predict year to year.
And there's no better example of that than the next guy on the depth chart, Sir Anthony Dominguez.
Yeah.
Right? If he's on the mound, what are you going to get? There, at times, he's looked like, you know, Alvarado from the right side. Other times he's looked, you know, not that good. So it's like, what do you get out of him? Same goes with Gregory Soto, right? Yep.
That's a high spring beta. Until the last, like the last outing.
Right.
The last outing. Yeah. You know, he was really good this spring. Yeah.
High beta, as they call it in some circles, just really just means a lot of variance. And we saw that last year. He either let up zero runs and zero hits, or he let up four or five runs. You know, that's basically what you get. Matt Strom is a little less exciting stuff wise, but he's reliable. He's effective.
Had the third highest strikeout rate for a lefty pitcher last year.
I have said this multiple times and I will say it again. He is, if not at the very top of my list for team MVP last year, he's in the top three because what he did, bumping back and forth between the rotation and the bullpen when they needed him to, staying effective throughout the year and then pitching well into the postseason was incredible. Incredible find. And I'm happy that he was extended.
Yeah, that, I don't know if it'll be a good deal or not, but I mean, you can't argue with, you know, they extended him for a year at the same salary that he, you know, is making last year and this year. You know, he initiated it. He's like, I went to them, you know, I have my agents go to them and say, I just want to take away any of the doubt about going into free agency this year. So,
nice.
You know, I mean, it's hard, you know, might go well, might not, but I mean, it's can't argue with the $7.5 million.
That's nice work by all involved there. And then you get into the last three arms who are currently active. And these are the guys who are going to come into the low leverage spots who are maybe only going to show up when guys need a rest day or are unavailable. Luis Ortiz, who I like and you like, he throws strikes. He looks like a reliable kind of, you know, multi-inning bulk guy.
He's a great April, May reliever.
Yeah. Junior Marte, who also had moments of looking unbelievable, but had more moments of looking unbelievably not great. And then Connor Brogdon, who we were just talking about, is basically on his last leg. Like this is his prove it moment. Every chance he gets to take the mound, he needs to be on his A game at this point. Because lurking in the wings are a couple of interesting arms. Orion Kerkering, who we've talked about a lot, who is still recovering from illness, not an arm related injury. So he'll be expected to get, you know.
Yeah, and people have been asking me, like, you know, wow, how could this take so long? And part of it was when it happened. He got hit pretty good by the flu, and like he was probably hit the hardest. And he basically didn't do anything for a week. And it was at a time where like you're really starting to build up.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't say he had to like start from scratch, but like it just took him a while to get back on the mound. And they're like, we're not, I mean, he was 97 on the backfield the day before we left. Like they could have put him on the roster. I think that they wanted him to just, you know, have a more traditional ramp up. They wanted to pitch back-to-back games before being activated, being in the majors. And with a younger guy, I'll buy that. You know, he's eligible to be activated April 9th, and I fully expect that he'll be on the roster then.
I think then, you know, Dylan Covey, Michael Rucker, also going to be on the major league injured list. Probably see them at some point during the year. I think the guy I am very intrigued by after hearing, you know, reports and getting a little brief look at him during the spring is Michael Mercado, the pickup from the Rays last fall and winter.
He was my camp crush, remember, at the beginning of spring?
Yes. And I have been converted.
Sometimes I get things wrong. Right. And wrong. Yes. But sometimes right.
I think you might be on to something with this guy. He'll be somebody I'm looking out for. I'm positive he will make an appearance this year. That's a lot of stuff, right? How much were we just talking about stuff? That's a lot of pure stuff.
Yeah, throwing Griff McGarry in there, and we don't know what he's going to be, but he's a reliever now, and that makes it way more realistic that he is in the majors at some point. You know, if he runs off a good, you know, if he takes to the relieving role, which again, big if, like, I don't know, you know, I don't know if we're ever going to see enough strikes, but it just puts him more in play for 24.
Yeah. You know, the guy who had maybe the least impressive raw stuff among that whole group might be, you know, Luis Ortiz, who's really going to be in there to throw strikes. It's not about, you know, blowing guys away for him in low left spots.
He's still like 94, 95.
Right.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. The bar, the minimum, the floor, all these other terms that I'm mixing up, the floor.
Yeah, like the worst fastball in the bullpen is Matt Strom.
Yeah, like, and he's
worst, I say, 94. By velocity wise, and it's got some good movement. You know, it's still a deceptive fastball. Yeah, he's like 93. Like he's the worst fastball in this bullpen.
So you can see it. If you put on the glasses, you can understand why some of these systems are in love with this Phillies bullpen unit.
And you can just see what they've prioritized.
Yes.
I mean, it's simple. It's very simple.
It's very simple. Now,
throw hard, throw strikes.
Will that mean there will be some frustrating nights? Yeah, of course. Everybody has bullpen meltdowns here. Fine. But I think for the most part, this is going to be a unit that is going to literally and figuratively save a whole bunch of games for this team. So that's great. I love stuff. It's exciting. They're going to strike out a lot of guys.
Can we get to our prop bets?
Let's touch on the offense real quick.
No, that's
just
right.
Just real quick. It's well, a lot of the same.
Do you want to talk about the Rojas Pache thing?
That is really the only big change from last year to this year. And there are some other dominoes around it, right? Getting Kyle Schwarber onto DH more regularly now that, you know, Harper can play the field. He'll be playing first base. We're carrying both, not we, the Phillies are carrying both Johan Rojas and Christian Pache. In a bit of an upset, Jake Cave was traded to the Colorado Rockies, which, you know what? Good for Jake Cave. I ended up rooting for Jake Cave late in the spring. I liked what I saw. If he wasn't going to get an opportunity here, you know, Nolan Jones, I saw fouled a ball off his knee late in spring. I don't know if he's got to miss a little bit of time, but the Rockies pick up their left-handed hitting outfield, you know, back up and fine. Good for him, man. Go hit in Coors Field. Go enjoy your life. I'm sure
that's going to be fantastic. Did you watch his interview that he gave like after he got to Rockies camp?
I did not.
He didn't seem very excited.
Well, the Rockies aren't going to be very good. He's going from a winning team to a not winning team. So I can understand that.
God, think
that,
about it. Man, but, the Rockies you know. Now, like, you know, Jordan Montgomery goes to Arizona, obviously. Like, the you know, the four teams in a division outside of the Rockies have, really loaded up.
Rockies, it's a good division, yeah.
The Rockies could lose 115 games.
The Rockies are just not. Chris Bryant is playing first base now.
Is he really?
Yeah, I have never. I've never experienced, at least not off the top of my head, I have never experienced a true star player go so quickly into anonymity while still being active. Well, I've never seen anything like this.
This is what he wanted. Find a nice farm to live out his days. And
anyway. He got it. Yeah, Colorado is going to be bad, and so for that reason, I can understand Cave's frustration.
Yeah, I mean, he's gonna play. He'll play. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, they move Cave, and that has them carrying both Rojas and Pache. And I get it. I don't think it's what I would have done. And I will say, Dave Dombrowski gave a really good explanation as to how they reached this decision, and he said, "Look, when you get to this point, you have to involve the manager, right?" You're talking about bench spots and how these guys are going to be used. I want to know how the manager feels and how he's going to use these players. And he said, I posed a question to Rob and I said, late game, Rojas is coming up, tough righty on the mound. Who are you using to pinch hit for him? Whit Merrifield or Jake Cave? Cave is obviously a left-handed hitter. Merrifield is a right-hand hitter. And Thompson told Dombrowski, I'm probably going to hit Whit Merrifield. And that made the decision for them. They decided not to carry a traditional lefty bat on the bench. You know, in the days that Merrifield is starting, you know, it's possible that Brandon Marsh is sitting there on the bench and he could be your lefty pinch hitter, you know, if need be. That was a reasonable explanation for why they did it.
It's a little bit of punch counterpunch with these moves too, right? We were just talking about some of the rival bullpens in the National League East. We brought up a couple of names in the Braves bullpen.
There's a lot of lefties in the Braves bullpen.
Right. So these teams pick up lefties ostensibly in part to counter the left-handed pop that the Phillies have in their lineup. You know, you look at the Aaron Bummers, the Tyler Matzeks, the Dylan Lee, AJ Minter kind of thing with the Braves, right? You look at the Marlins, Tanner Scott, emergent from the left-hand side. And really in their rotation, the Marlins are very
all lefties,
lefty heavy. One of the top guys in the Nationals rotation for how much that concerns you, Mackenzie Gore, is left-handed. There are going to be plenty of opportunity. Andrew Nardi on the Marlins also as well is probably going to be leaned on pretty heavily. There are going to be a lot of opportunities late in games for right-handed hitters to have the advantage. Not exclusively. You know, if you want to get really into it, yeah, the Braves are probably going to use Raisel Iglesias to close out a bunch of games, and he's a good right-handed reliever. There are going to be a lot of chances for right-handed hitters to work late in games against some of these power lefty arms. And it makes sense then to think about that in the construction of this division and the way these other teams are putting their rosters together, that you don't feel like you're losing as much if your only left-handed bat off the bench is your backup catcher.
Yeah, I mean, and also, like, the Phillies just, you don't pinch hit anymore. There's a DH now. Pinch hitting is essentially a lost art in the National League. Yeah,
it's true.
You know, having a traditional power bat on your bench now, not as much of a thing anymore. Again, because especially when you're a roster like the Phillies, and you're only pinch hitting most likely for one guy in your lineup on a nightly basis. And they will pinch hit for Rojas if the situation arises. If they're in a trailing situation late in the game, yes, you will see them pinch it for Rojas. Carrying Pache, it's insurance. You know, he's redundant, no doubt, with Rojas on the roster. I think it gives them insurance. You know, if they decide in 5, 6, 7 weeks that, you know, the Rojas thing is just not working, they can send him out and they at least retain some defense. And let me be clear, like if they were to send Rojas out, it's not as if he would be replaced in center by Pache. They look at Pache as a guy who should play against left-handed starters. And so he would enter some sort of platoon situation with, you know, some sort of three-man weave, I'm guessing, with Pache, Marsh, and Rojas. Pache, Marsh, and Merrifield, excuse me. But again, I think that's down the line if they need to pull that lever, and they wanted to reserve the right to pull that lever. So they wanted more time with Pache. I get that. You know, he's not going to play very much, I don't think.
Well, and I guess that brings us to our last really kind of interesting outfield domino, because the rest of the offense is as you'd expect, and there isn't a whole lot of new soil to turn over there. Brandon Marsh did not play a lot against left-handed pitching last year. He just didn't. And all the while, the Phillies tell us, you know, all right, we really believe in Brandon Marsh, and we'll work him in against left-handed pitching as we feel the matchup benefits him. Now, the expectation seems to be, to me, that he is going to play more. But with the carrying of Pache.
No, less about that.
And Whit Merrifield.
Yes, him.
That might not necessarily be the case, that he might still be a strong side. Well, platoon might be harsh. Is he going to play more against left-handed pitching, or are they going to stick with matchups in that spot?
Hard to tell. Probably the biggest question I left camp with unanswered, because nobody really seemed to have an answer for me. And that's fair. They want Merrifield to play like at least, you know, twice a week. And what is the best way for him to play, Paul?
Against a lefty, either spelling Stott or Marsh.
I don't think they want to spell Stott very often. He'll get,
well, sure.
You know, he'll get a day here and there, but I don't think that they want him to. He's going to play. They like Bryson Stott.
Good.
So I, you know, maybe we see Marsh slide over, you know, and play a little more center field. If they want offense early in the year, but I don't think they do. You know, I think they want Rojas to you know, get a shot here. So, I don't think that Marsh is going to play against most lefties to begin the year.
Okay. I guess then that, all right, so we have
the big test is going to be game two. Like, is he going to play against Max Fried?
Max Fried. Yeah. All right. So there is one more offensive question that I think we can touch on just real quick before we get into these props and get into the fun stuff. There is already a bit of consternation, and a slow spring did not really help, about Kyle Schwarber in the leadoff spot. And I think, I don't really know if there's an answer to this right now, right? Maybe they'll try something after X number of games. I just look at that as a failure of a different kind, not on the player, not on the manager, not on the front office. It's a failure of marketing and advertising. I think just on the whole, I am part of this because I am somebody who is talking into a microphone about baseball with something of a modest platform who can reach people about messages and like all this stuff. I have done my part, apparently, in failing to communicate how important on base percentage is. In the grand scheme of things, okay? There is a failure. There is a breakdown that happened somewhere along the line where the message is not totally received that on-base percentage literally means how often you don't make an out. What is the point of batting? The ultimate molecular atomic point of batting, to not make an out. You go up to the plate either to walk, to get a hit. Maybe you get hit by a pitch if you're lucky / unlucky. There are rare occasions where you are asked to give yourself up to advance a runner. That is the 0.5% acceptable out. Like maybe you get it into the outfield for a sac fly. Okay, that's not the ideal. The ideal outcome is to not make an out. And the way we present OBP, it first of all, as a three place decimal, that's not a percentage. That's one failure of what we're doing here. But it is more important than batting average. And this is a debate that has been going on for a long time. Batting average tells you things. It does. It really does. I'm not saying it's meaningless. That was the argument at the very outset of like Sabre 2.0, like, oh, batting average is meaningless. You don't need it. No, I think it's instructive to tell you what kind of player a player is. I think it helps. On base percentage tells you so much more. And the reason Kyle Schwarber is effective as a leadoff hitter, despite hitting 200 and striking out 200 times, is because he gets on base. He has a huge share of his other plate appearances where he either hits the ball to the moon or he walks and gets on that way. And he did not make an out. 343 on base. I get that he hit 197. I get that that looks weird and bad out of a leadoff hitter. I get that it goes against the archetype. It was still third on this team behind Bryce Harper and Brandon Marsh last year. And Marsh barely qualified. He is effective. And I get that he can be frustrating with the strikeouts, but largely it works to put this guy in the leadoff spot. Now,
can I my counter? Can I give you my counter?
Yes, yes, you can. I will gather my breath as you give your counter.
Well, I agree with everything you're saying. I'm just saying the reason why
devil's advocate. Yeah.
He doesn't look like a leadoff hitter. And I understand why for a lot of people that's tough to overcome. He doesn't. I'll say this. I think he's in a, like, physically, he's in a vastly different place than he was to begin the season last year.
That's good.
You know, is he still going to clog up the bases, you know, at times? Yeah, I think so. You know, is he playable in left field? Not really. But he'll probably play a little bit there every now and then, not often. But yeah, I mean, I agree with everything you're saying. I also understand why, you know, for a lot of people, they can't get past the way, you know, what he looks like and the batting average. And they're like, that's not a leadoff hitter. I get it. But I think that there's a reason why he will be batting leadoff again on opening day and that why they'll stick with him. And
think of it this way, right? And this is one smaller part of the argument. If you move him down and you expect him to bat fourth, fifth, sixth, I don't know, pick one of those spots. With his profile lately, a low average, high walk, high strikeout, decent amount of home, well, more than decent amount of home runs, good amount of power, really good amount of power, 80 power. Where does that work best? Does it not suit you best to be at the top of the lineup?
And a lot of this, right? And a lot of this has to do with Bryce Harper too, right? Because like in an ideal world, like if one of them batted righty, you'd have, you know, you'd have Harper batting third and Schwarber bats cleanup, right? Like that's Kyle Schwarber looks like a cleanup hitter. But they need to keep one righty between those two guys at all times. I don't think they want to bat Bryce Harper second. So I think he prefers to bat third. And that's fine. If that's where he's most comfortable, then keep him there. Sure. That means that you're dropping Schwarber down to fifth. And I think that you've lost a lot of, you know, the things that make him important to them, the high on base, like it, being fifth in the lineup. I think you lose a lot there.
Because then you're only real like parachute at that point, who you expect to be one of your more effective just hitters in that part of the lineup is Castellanos, depending on where you're hitting him. You're not setting the table with Schwarber ahead of Turner and Harper.
I mean, you're probably going Stott, Turner, Harper, Real Muto, Schwarber, right? You know, and maybe they pull, you know, maybe they get to that point during the season.
Still good, by the way.
Have to.
Still good.
Yeah, I mean, and I think a lot of it will depend, you know, if Bryson Stott, you know, is drawing a few more walks and getting on base, like lower in the lineup, maybe they do it. I think I understand why they're going to go with this.
Yeah, also. I mean, I'm sorry. I will now issue my mea culpa to those of you out there who do still really like batting average. I'm not mad at you. I'm mad at the effort or lack of effort that we have put forth in really just explaining why on base percentage to me, speaking from my perspective, is so important and why it outweighs an unsightly batting average. Like I feel as though it's just a missed opportunity to get more people on board and a little bit more content and accepting of the way Kyle Schwarber has been hitting the last 2 years and where he has been doing it within the lineup.
You know what, Paul? Everybody loves to debate a lineup, a batting order.
Yes, they do. But that's all I'll say about that.
Let's get to something more fun.
Yeah, let's get to the fun stuff. All right.
So did you actually remember, track? Yeah, did you track what we did last year?
I did, actually. I'm pulling this up in the Google Doc as we speak. You may remember, if you were with us last year, for the 2023 season preview, that Matt and I just kind of came up with some over under little prop thingies. And I know gambling is kind of a thing these days. So these are not real. Whatever. Don't put money on these. Don't like, just don't. This is for the fun part of this. Whatever part of this that's left is fun. That's what we're tapping into here. So last year we had, what is the number? 2, 4, 6, 8, 11 over unders. We revisited at the end of the regular season last year. We did okay. I think we can do better, Matt. I think we can do a lot better.
I'm looking at some of these. They're very funny.
We kind of went haywire with some of these. But we're going to do them again because we are not deterred. We are not discouraged. We are emboldened and motivated to be better prognosticators and predictors. So we've just kind of come up with these numbers. These are not pulled from any kind of book or anything. We just kind of looked at performance and what we thought was reasonable, and just
I'm a good bookmaker
going with it. You're a great bookmaker. I will remember forever how close you were to getting that NOLA contract. Okay, let's start at the top here, the top of the list that the rest of you listening to this audio only podcast cannot see. the first bullet on our list starts with Trey Turner, who I am becoming more and more convinced I'm really leaning heavily into this bounce back year narrative thing. Trey Turner, 199.5 hits. This is a guy who, if he's right for a full season, is truly and absolutely a game-changing talent. But he has never had 200 hits in a season before.
Yeah.
He led the league with 195 back in 2021 when he won the batting title. But he's never had 200 hits. Now, he'll be hitting in the top third of the order all year, whether it's first, second, third, most of it in second, which means he's going to see a lot of plate appearances. He's going to have a lot of opportunities to get there. 199.5. Matt, is this the time where Trey Turner gets his first ever 200 hit season?
So I'm going to take the over. I'll say yes. And it's only because this is tied to another prediction that I was forced to make. And you know me that I don't like to make predictions. But The Athletic asked its writers to make a bold prediction, bold in a capital B, for the season about the team you cover.
Yeah.
And my bold prediction, I don't know if it's that bold, but I think it's kind of bold, is that Trey Turner wins MVP.
Okay.
And I don't know if it's going to happen. They, they wanted something bold. So I went with that being bold. I think it's certainly within the realm of possibility. And you're right, Paul. I mean, this guy, when right, is one of the best 10 players in baseball. He turns 31 in June, firmly in the prime of his career here. Still had an 111 OPS plus despite, really being nothing for 4 months last year. It was remarkable, I think. I could have a big year.
Yeah, and I am going to agree with you. I'm also saying that this is going to be an over. Maybe he doesn't clear it by too much. It doesn't really matter.
The way things are scored now in the sport, you're almost, he'll probably get six or seven that would have been errors before that are hits. So factor that in.
Oh my God. Okay. If we weren't already an hour into this, you might have just unlocked a second soapbox within the span of 5 minutes, because me and official scorers are at war, lowercase WAR. We are. I am blood feuding with the way people score hits and errors these days. I am, but I'm going to hold back. I'm going to restrain myself, but you're right. It does help the cause. Okay. Second bullet over on the pitching side, Mr. Ranger himself. We're making a lot out of his season innings total. I think for good reason. His career high, 155 and a third, which he did in 2022. It was all of April in 2023, right? It was a good chunk of the early part of the year. And yeah, May 13th was his debut last year. And he made 22 starts with 125 innings. We're trying to think, again, a little more positively here. Let's think about workload. Let's think about building it up. Let's think about eating into that roughly 180 innings per rotation spot thing I keep talking about. Ranger Suarez, over under 169.5 innings pitched.
I'm going to go under here, not by much, but I'm still going to just say that, he has some kind of injury that forces him to miss 3-4 weeks, as he typically does. you know, maybe he doesn't. Maybe this is the year that he doesn't. And there's a lot of reasons to believe that this is the year that he doesn't. But I'm going to go slightly under, somewhere in the mid-160s.
Yeah, I'll do the same thing for the same reasons. I would like to see him eclipse 170. I think that would mean a lot of things went right. You know, he makes at or near 30 starts, getting 6 innings roughly per start, whatever that number ends up being. That would be great. That would be amazing. The Phillies would benefit strongly from that. But I think it's just, it's going to be a stepping stone toward that. And maybe I think about 170 in 2025. All right. The third one is something I've been going back and forth about this, about how much I really believe in this. And I think I believe pretty strongly in this, that the Phillies have a lot of Gold Glove contenders again this year. They had a couple guys who were finalists last year, picked up a couple wins. They might even have more this year, right? Let's think about this for a second. If you believe in the ceiling of Johan Rojas in center field, that's one. If Brandon Marsh ends up playing most of the time in left field and qualifies, he's a very good defender, and, you know, maybe he picks one up and surprises. Bryson Stott has built up a reputation as being an excellent defensive second baseman, so he'll probably be in the mix. If you believe the hype about Bryce Harper at first base, there's another one. We're up to four. Realmuto has already won a couple, so naturally you have to put him in the mix. That's five. And then you think about Zach Wheeler and Ranger Suarez. You know, Wheeler just won it, and we keep trying to bump Ranger up as a guy who should be contending for it more regularly. That's a whole lot of contention across the diamond for potential Gold Glove winners. And so, for whatever this is worth to you, this award, and I don't know, that's a different debate. Total Gold Glove winners on the 2024 Phillies at 1.5. Matt, what do you think?
Under. After you give that old feel, I don't know. Ooh. Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I mean, yeah, there will be chances, but I don't know. The voting for these awards is so unpredictable. And
yeah,
I mean, I could very well see them having two Gold Gloves. I'll just go under, though. I'll say one.
Okay. I'm going to go over and say three.
Wow.
I think Stott pulls home his first. I think JT nabs another one. And then I'll take one of Harper or Rojas, either believing the hype at first base or believing the hype in center field, assuming he can hit long enough to stay up. I'll lean into it. Why not? Okay. Next one, team leader in home runs. So you may remember Kyle Schwarber. We were just talking about him a little bit, right? He's pretty strong. He tends to hit a lot of home runs. He led the National League with 46 in 2022 and then decided that wasn't enough and hit 47 in 2023. He led the team both years, obviously, as you would expect from such gaudy totals. Expecting potentially a bit of a step back, maybe, we've set a line here for team leader in homers, who you'd probably expect to be Schwarber, but may not be, and maybe this factors into your answer, at 44.5. Matt, what do you think about that?
It's a good line.
Thank you.
I'll say under. I think they'll just spread the home runs out a little more. Remember how they went like almost like 2 months with like one multi-run, like they didn't hit a three-run homer for like 2 months or something last year. That was crazy.
They really had a propensity for hitting solo homers. That was frustrating.
Yeah. I'll take the under. I'll say that Schwarber leads them, but he ends up hitting like 42.
Yeah, I'm going to say under as well. I actually think it's going to be a little bit less than that. I think maybe we crack 40 again this year. I'm seeing 39 bouncing around in front of me. 39, 40, something like that. What would be really cool is if somebody hits 50 for the first time since Ryan Howard,
yeah.
You know, but I'll stay a little conservative with this one and say under. Similarly, related to production, let's think about RBI, stakes, ribbies. The good stuff. Nick Castellanos led the team last year with 106. Do you remember that? I think if you had asked me just at any point in the offseason, you could have asked me the day after the season ended, who led the Phillies in RBI? I would have gotten it wrong. I don't think I would have remembered. But he did. He did. 106 RBIs. This year, let's think a little bit loftier. Let's think, okay, Trey Turner, table setter, near the top of the lineup, has a better year, on base more frequently. The boppers behind him have more opportunities to drive guys in, apart from solo home runs, of course. So with that in mind, the team leader in RBI line set at 109.5. Matt, do we have anybody get 110 RBI this year?
I do. I think I'm going to go over all, and the guy who I think will do it is Bryce Harper. And do you know that Bryce has only had 2 100 RBI seasons in his whole career?
I do now.
Yeah.
I think a lot of that was a product of him. Well, he batted leadoff early in his career, and then yeah, he was batting second a lot.
Yeah.
That really has.
I just think there's going to be more guys on base for him this year. You know, last year there was not often, you know, guys on base for him. He had 72 RBIs, and obviously he missed the first month of the season. But I'm going to go with Harper. And I mean, I'm not, you know, the prop right. is over RBI, over 109. And yeah, I think there's numerous guys that you can pick and say, is someone, you know, this guy's going to have 110 ribbies next year. This year.
Yeah. I think this goes hand in hand with talking about Turner having a strong bounce back year. I don't think you can have one without the other, right? If you have healthy hitters behind him and Turner has this bounce back, like I think he's going to have, the quality of hitter behind him is such that you would expect the RBI opportunities to get cashed in. I am also going to say over. I don't think we're going to hit 120, but I think we're going to have a team leader with a really strong RBI total at the end of the year. Okay, now we get into some of yours, Matt, which are a little bit more fun and a little less rote than mine. We're going to think about Kyle Schwarber and starting in left field. This is starts, not appearances, not any of that. We're not getting into particulars, just starts. Times he is penciled into the opening, the starting lineup in left field, and he takes his first plate appearance as a left fielder. You've set that line at 12.5. which would mean roughly, if he hits that on the nose, about 2 starts in left field per month throughout the season. What are you thinking about this?
I'm going to go over. The line probably should be a little higher, but I hope that we don't do the same thing for every prop because we've been in an agreement here. And that means that I think there's been bad lines. But I'm going to go over. I don't think it's going to go over by a lot. I think it's really close. He's a DH. There will be days where they want to free up the DH spot. Totally understand that. But I don't think it's going to be a lot of days.
Well, we are going to diverge here, and I'm going to say under. I can understand wanting to keep him loose for, you know, however it helps keeping him out in left field. Maybe he, you know, it's a ball player thing to stay a little bit more engaged when you, you know, feel the grass, when you're actually out there, you're in the middle of the game. And not just, you know, taking your hacks 4 times a game and that's it. I think there is something to that. And if he feels good, if his knee is feeling good and he feels like he can get out there and somebody needs a break, okay. It's going to happen. He'll be out there a few times. I know that for sure. I am going to say under. Just because.
Yeah, I think it's going to be also about the DH spot itself, right? Like maybe there's a guy who's banged up, but they want to keep him in the lineup. It's like, oh, he just needs a DH for 2 days. Kyle, can you go play left field?
That is true. That is true. And that could very easily push it over, picking up a couple starts in a short span there. I think in a perfect world scenario, it's under where he stays DHing. Ideally stays fresher that way and can stay productive that way. He'll breach, you know, the double digit mark, maybe 10, something like that. But I'll go under. Just for a little spice, right? Let's diverge a little bit in these answers. Okay, back into stats. The team leader in saves. Okay, so this is one I was looking at. The Phillies have not had a 40 save pitcher since Brad Lidge in 2018.
Wow. It is really, Genmar Gomez didn't do it?
He did not do it. It's really not the way a lot of teams deploy their best reliever anymore, which is part of this. The Phillies have a lot of guys that they can spread the love around to, right? You're going to see a number of different dudes and save opportunities this year. Maybe a lot of that falls to Alvarado. Maybe some more fall back to Jeff Hoffman, Sir Anthony Dominguez. Maybe Greg Soto picks up a couple here and there. With Craig Kimbrell on the team last year, especially when he was going well, he was more of a guy who fit into the routine of being the ninth inning guy. You saw it move into that. Started early in the year as more of a seventh, eighth inning kind of thing, and then moved into, you know, a traditional closer role. And that's why he led the team with his total in the 20s. But he's gone. And that distribution might change. Now, we expect the Phillies to win a bunch of games. Whether they're close or not, that remains to be seen. But the line here for team leader in saves...
It's probably too low.
At 19.5. So I guess that means you're going over.
I'm not. I'm going under, and it's not because I don't think they're going to win a lot of games or have a lot of save opportunities. I just think it's going to end up getting spread around.
Mm-hmm.
I really do like Kirkering. You didn't even mention him. He could emerge, in the summertime, maybe as a guy that they like in the ninth inning. But I do think it's going to be matchup dependent for most of the year. You'll have guys that, have streaks of effectiveness, have, some injuries, they're relievers. This happens. So I don't see them having a 20 save guy, but I don't like going under here, but I will also. Genmar Gomez had 37 saves in 2016.
37. Good for you, Genmar. Yeah. I mean, I look at the team last year, they had 45 saves as a team, spread among 9 pitchers, and Craig Kimbrel had half those at 23. If you do some, napkin math and distribute those among 9 pitchers, you still only have a leader in Jose Alvarado with 12 or 13. It's not exactly how it's going to go, probably, but it could be. At least in terms of distribution, the number of different guys who could see a save opportunity and ideally pull it off, I think they could keep it low. I know 19.5, it looks weird to think about this team potentially winning 90 to 95 games and only having a saves leader in the teens. That's not typically something that goes hand in hand, at least not from the way we watched baseball growing up. We are in a different era now. But I'm also going to go under, back to agreement, just because I think, that distribution is going to be a little bit too much to ignore. I think there are going to be too many guys who can pick up a save when called upon. Okay.
By the way, can I make it? Oh, okay. Well, I'll save this for my hot take predictions later.
Oh, okay. All right. So then let's breeze through this one. So back in the rotation, the total number of combined starts from the top three of Zach Wheeler, Aaron Nola, and Ranger Suarez at 89.5.
So this line's probably too high.
To top this, they'd really, oh boy. All right. So what do you
think? 32 times three is 96.
Yeah.
Screw it. I'm going to say over.
Oh, okay. Wow. Okay.
The line's probably, it should have been like 87 and a half. Can we change the line to 87 and a half?
Can we do that on the fly? Fine. 87 and a half. There you go.
And I'm going over 87 and a half. All right.
Okay.
But you should still go under on this.
I don't want to.
No, but it's the right thing to do.
It probably is.
Because even if a guy misses, 3 weeks and misses a few starts, this number gets in trouble.
Yep. And even if, if Wheeler and Nola each go 32, which they could, that's 64, and then Ranger would need to make 24. Again, it's eminently doable, and I would love to see it happen. Pitching is just, it's too tenuous. I'll take the under. I begrudgingly will take the under there. Okay. Another trio, this time on the offensive side. It's not really an over-under here. This is really more of a competition. When you go to the park and you see the SEPTA race, right? You see the trains, you're picking your horse, or maybe you're looking at the three cups with the ball underneath and you're picking the right one. I don't know, whatever your game of choice is. I love the ball under the cup. I think that's so great. Who's going to have the highest OPS among Bryson Stott, Alec Bohm, or Brandon Marsh? The daycare, as they can only be called for so much longer.
Yes, Stott literally has a child now.
Yeah. Yes, he does.
Give me Bohm.
Ooh, I like it.
I just think he's going to be a little more pop power.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead. I want to hear what you do.
I'm going to go with Brandon Marsh. I like Marsh's. I think Marsh has the best on base ability of the three of them, and even if he doesn't have better game power than Alec Bohm, which is a debate, he might. I think this is a guy who could still really string together a 30 double season, that kind of thing. Have the slugging to come to to be the complement to the OBP. So I think that gives me Brandon Marsh.
My debate was between Bohm and Stott, and that was simply because I do think Stott will show better on-base skills this year, and that could really juice his OPS.
Okay, so that brings up an interesting point. Brief tangent on this one, then. I've seen things go a little bit back and forth on Bryson Stott. We have last year where he was really good at fouling pitches off and eventually getting some hits and 2 strike counts. It was his calling card, basically, for most of last year. And there were some things written this spring where he was like, oh, well, you know, I let some hittable pitches go by. I might be a little bit more aggressive earlier in counts. I'm wondering what the balance is going to look like there between a little bit of increased aggressiveness at the potential sacrifice of working those two strike counts. And do they eventually translate into more walks later in counts? Like, what does that look like? It's kind of a rhetorical question, but it does make me wonder. Just, you know.
Yeah. Again, I mean,
rhetorical.
You don't want to take away what he's, you know, right. You want him to improve his game without sacrificing something he's good at.
Yes. Yeah. Agreed.
But I do think there's a better balance in there for him to achieve.
We have one more player specific prop before we get to our final granddaddy of them all, Phillies win total prop. And that is, this makes me laugh. So this was kind of a running thing you and I had last year that we
had were just this.
Amazed by as it went by. Every time it happened, we would shoot off a text to each other when, regardless of the point of the season. The number of plate appearances before Edmundo Sosa's first walk of 2024.
For the record, Sosa had 74 strikeouts and 8 walks last year.
And you looked this up before we recorded. It took him 37 plate appearances last year?
Okay. Yes.
Edmundo Sosa is far and away the most aggressive hitter on this club.
Maybe in baseball.
He just is, man. He
loves to swing. You can't fault a guy for loving to swing.
He loves to hack. He lets it. I'll tell you what though, when he really makes contact, it is beautiful. He does have a really nice follow through when he gets his A swing off. But he is aggressive.
He takes his A swing every single swing.
He's really aggressive. All right. So the number of plate appearances before Edmundo Sosa's first walk, his first base on balls at 30.5.
Matt, over. I mean, the reality is he'll probably walk once, you know, early in the season. It'll be really, really funny. It'll be like a big walk. You know, I don't know. It'll be a big moment. He draws a walk and, you know, one of the kind of moments where he draws a walk and he, you know, flips a bat and is clapping to the dugout, those kind of walks. I'm going over though. I have to just for the fun of it.
This is one of those things where like, I'm going to be hysterically laughing when he draws a walk. And if I happen to be at that game that day or something, or I'm around other people, they're just going to be shooting me a look like, it's just a walk. What do you want about? this is pretty good. I'll add the asterisk that, you know, this does not count an intentional walk ahead of maybe like Rojas.
Oh yeah. If he's batting eight. Yeah. Like, no, that doesn't count. Screw
no,
that.
No. We're talking like actual legit four pitch, you know, take your base. This is really funny. And I don't know which way I want to go on this because it was so amazing to me that he went 37 last year, and every time he did it did feel like an event, and so I can't escape that because I would
at least
I did yeah to us right I would like for it to be shorter, but my god, I can't help but feel like it'll be over again and that it'll be in the low 30s again. So I'm gonna agree with you. I'm gonna say over. Let's say 32 this time. I hope he smashes it gets like the fifth one he walks in. That'll just be like, all right, we will have to talk about that when that happens. Okay. All right. Collecting my breath here. This is it. This is the big one. This is what we like to end on each year. I guess this is the second time we've done this. So all of two times we've done this where we look ahead and think, all right, how many wins are the 2024 Philadelphia Phillies gonna put up? Right now, that line is at 90.5. They obviously
is that the Vegas line? Where'd you pull that from?
That is from,
I mean,
not Vegas somewhere. Line.
What book? I mean, let's see.
I should have noted that.
I'll just pull up, you know.
Maybe it wasn't a book. Maybe I just said, are they going to improve on last year? I don't remember. I really don't. We've been putting this together over the course of the last week. So some of this has been a bit piecemeal.
I want you to go first this time.
Oh, thanks. Okay. So I'm going over because I am leaning into optimism. I am leaning into positive regression. I am leaning into the good things about this team. I am leaning into what I look at as being a really, really good Major League Baseball roster. I think this is a complete lineup. I think this is a lineup that for most positions around the diamond is going to play good defense. I think this is a lineup that has a very good starting rotation and a very good bullpen. I realize they have stiff competition in Atlanta. I think there are going to be nuisance games with both the Marlins and the Mets. but they also have the Nationals that they can pick on this year. And there are some other teams in the National League, namely the NL Central teams and the bottom of the NL West, that could really help things out, that could really help this cause. I think this is not a team that's going to roll over when faced with some of the stiffer competition. I think they are going to give the Braves trouble. I think they are going to give the Dodgers trouble. I think they are going to give the Padres and Giants, for whatever you count, you know, for their contention as being, I think they're going to give them trouble. I think they're going to give the Reds, the Brewers, the Cubs. They're going to be a problem team. And I think with all of that coming together, the talent on this team, having a bunch of games against the Nationals, having a bunch of games against a Marlins team that may not be as good as some systems may think. The Mets are probably, you know, they're somewhere in the middle here. They called this a transitional year, but they'll still be tough, and those games are always interesting. I think this is a team that wins 93 or 94 games, and so I go over by a couple. Did that buy you enough time?
FanDuel's got them 89.5. DK is 89. I think most of them have them at 89.5. Right?
Okay.
So
okay,
let's finally juiced it by one. I'm going. Yeah. I just say they win 90 games. I do think they can win the division. It's funny because the implied odds right now, most of the betting markets have them at like, so they're like plus 320, right? Excuse me, plus 320 right now. And if you do the implied odds in that, that's generally like, I don't know, about 20, a little over 20%, somewhere around like 23% maybe, on the betting markets, implied odds to win the East. I generally agree with that. I do think it's going to take fewer wins to win the East. Like, I do think it'll be more like 94 or 95 to win the East. I think they'll ultimately fall short, but would not be surprised if they win the division. Wouldn't be surprised if they won 94 games and they win division by a game.
Yeah, that's really what it comes down to for me too, right? If I'm thinking about them pulling off a, we'll call it mid-90s win total, that is something I also have to start thinking about, is can they realistically make a run at the division? I think they can. Do I think it's likely? No. I think it's better than 5% chance or whatever they're being given right now, because this is a good team. It is. Yeah, the Braves are good. Absolutely. Of course they are. They're going to give the Phillies problems. Those series, this opening series, every series that they play this year, it's going to be a fight. It's going to be a brawl. But I think the Phillies can hang with them. I really do. And maybe they pull out one or two more of those games they shouldn't have won but ended up winning anyway kind of things. Who knows? It's a long baseball season, and those things happen. And that could be all it takes. You know, a better start. Talk about that a lot. April and May, they get off to a better start. Just look at that start alone. If they go 30-25 at the end of May last year, as opposed to 25-30. Well, hello. There's your 95 right there.
Yeah.
With the rest of the season.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I mean, what was the record? Yeah, after the 0-4 start.
Yeah.
It's like
eminently doable
percentage. Yeah. I mean, it's yeah.
So that's why I say over. I think this is a team that could definitely win with the right breaks, of course, that you need throughout the course of a year. Could definitely win 93-94 games. Okay, and to end us, to wrap this up, because this is, as always, our marathon episode. Thank you for hanging with us. I hope this has been enjoyable, as I've laughed about Edmundo Sosa drawing a walk. We've got a couple of just stray thoughts, stray predictions, little assorted things that may not be necessarily related to anything else, or maybe they are, who knows? Maybe we've talked about them already and I can self-edit this list as I talk about it. Matt, I'll let you go first. I think you've got a couple of interesting ideas, one of which you've already talked about, but a couple of these other ones I think will be encouraging for people to hear. So what are some predictions on your mind for this season?
I try to make these like my hottest takes, and I don't have as many as you do because I just was putting them together. But my first one is I'll have Sir Anthony Dominguez leading the Phillies in saves this year.
I like that.
I mentioned this one earlier. You alluded to it, and it's in my bold predictions at The Athletic. So it's going to be published, so I might as well stick with it here. And that's Trey Turner wins MVP, and that's pretty out there. I don't know if that'll happen. The last one I have for right now is that I think I'll say that Johan Rojas hits 251.
251. That just feels right. That's just the number that's coming to you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Sure.
And if he hits 251, he's going to be one of the better center fielders in baseball.
Sure. I mean, that 251 average probably only comes with a 300 on base and maybe a 290 slug.
Right.
I don't know if he's going to hit homer off of a non-position player pitching. That's beside the point. Well, he's up here for the defense. And if he hits 251, he could only hit 251 and that be the entirety of his on-base percentage. And I think people would be okay with that.
And then my last one, can I add one more?
You absolutely can.
Mick Abel makes 4 starts for the Phillies this year.
Oh, see, I like that one this year more than last year when I think we tried to squeeze in the top guys with their innings, right? We had something on the innings last year. It makes more sense. And he is somebody who has clearly leapfrogged McGarry, even though McGarry is older and at the higher level. Andrew Painter obviously still hurt for this
year. I mean, I think Abel had always been ahead of McGarry.
Yeah. He probably, yeah. But it's even clearer now that that's where he is. And he is probably going to stick as a starting pitcher. So I like that. And especially now, you know, with the thought that we have about the durability of some of these rotation spots, you know, yeah, okay. I can definitely see that. All right. For my part, I think, and this was the rather mild bold prediction I gave our friend Pat Gallen on CBS over the weekend. I came into this unprepared and he asked nice for a bold prediction. And I was like, yeah, thank you. Coming from the guy who is published daily in a national publication.
Semi-daily.
It's semi-daily, yes. Trey Turner goes 30-30. Could I stretch it and say 35-35? Yeah, if I was really feeling my oats. You know, that's like a 99th percentile outcome. That would be amazing. But he's also never gone 30-30, so let's just start there and say that that's pretty bold.
He's never done 30-30,
no. So I'll say that. The next one is that both Zach Wheeler and Aaron Nola finished in the top 10 of Cy Young Award voting this year. I like Nola to have a better year than he did last year, and I think Zach Wheeler is still in the very
prime. This entire podcast without talking about Aaron Nola.
We did. I'm not concerned about Aaron Nola. I like that he's locked up.
I think he's due for a better season.
Yeah. I think he can only go up from here. And the last one is that three hitters in the lineup get 100 or more RBI. I have to stick with it. If everybody's going to stay healthy, if Turner's going to set the table, you know, if Harper's going to play a lot of the year being at first base now, guys lower in the line, maybe, you know, Castellanos gets 100 again. Maybe Bohm, if he has that power that we keep thinking is lurking somewhere in there. I don't know. I think three guys could get 100 RBI. And that's something this team hasn't done in a long time. I think I don't have the play index page. Sorry, the stat head page open at the moment. But I was looking this up the other day, and I think it's been years since they did that. So that would be cool. I would enjoy all of those things very much. So Matt, I think that's it. I think there's reason for everything we've talked about here to reflect what the Athletics Optimism Survey had pegged for this team.
Yeah, it was high.
It was high. This ran about a week or so ago. They were not the top team. There are a lot of other fan bases who are incredibly optimistic about their teams, rightfully so. There are teams that should be feeling very good. Phillies fans polled in the Athletics Hopometer rankings came in at 96.9% optimistic, which is actually a sliver down from the year before, which is interesting, but still really high. And I feel like that's about right. It's loaded with stars. It's proven to work. It gets them into the playoffs, and then the team gets into the LCS or beyond. You know, is that guaranteed for this year? No, nothing in baseball is guaranteed, but they've set themselves
up. Nothing in life is guaranteed.
Nothing in life is guaranteed. That is absolutely true. It's our slogan. Philly therapy. Nothing in life is guaranteed.
Your 100 RBI thing. Your three guys, 100 RBIs. You picked something that the Phillies have done twice in the last 95 years.
There we go. That's the spice. That's the
last time they did it was 2005, Abreu, Burrell, Ali. And the only other time they did it was in 1932. Don Hurst, Chuck Klein, and Pinky Whitney.
Chuck Klein, very underrated historical all-timer.
Underrated. He's a Hall of Famer.
I know. Well, I think we don't. Well, we don't talk about him enough because it was the 1930s. Okay. But like, he's...
I love that. That's the conclusion of our 2024 season preview. Is that we need to be talking about Chuck Klein more?
No, no, that's not me. You know what? I think it just means I play too much out of the park baseball.
I think that's true.
The perfect team. I'm too mired in these historical seasons. I'm like, oh, why are we talking about this guy? Why aren't we talking about, you know, John Henry Lloyd from the Negro Leagues as one of the best hitting shortstops of all time? Dan Brouthers is one of the best first basemen of all time. I need to get my head out of.
You need to take a walk.
I do need to take a walk. It's good for your health, mental and physical. Anyway, boy, we're getting
interrupted.
Loopy.
You, I don't know.
No, it's good. No,
you, I'm sorry.
You know, you needed to interrupt me. This episode is just about over. It's 90 minutes long. I've had a lot of fun, Matt. I hope you've had fun. I hope all of you out there have had fun listening to this. There is reason to believe that you are going to continue to have a lot of fun this year. It's a good baseball team. They are smack dab in the middle of their contention window. And by God, if you don't enjoy this now while it is happening, you will regret it the next time this team is bad. Learn from your mistakes. Look, if you're listening to this, chances are good that you watched a decent amount of this team from 2015 to 17.
Chances are good you saw Genmar Gomez save a game.
Look, you know what I'm talking about. You know the perils. You know what could happen a few years from now. It could. It's not going to happen this year. Enjoy this year, because good baseball and contending baseball is a lot of fun. Can't take it for granted. Remember, Phillies therapy, nothing in life is guaranteed. Thank you, as always, for listening. Before we go, Matt, do you have anything coming up to kick off the season here as the Phillies get ready to take on the Braves in their opening series?
I really don't. I'm sorry. I really don't. I mean, like, I had some stuff from going back down to Florida, but, you know, I feel like a lot about this team that can be said has been said. And,
yeah,
you know, I think everyone's just ready to see them play. No?
Absolutely. I know I'm ready to see them play. Whether they actually play tomorrow, Thursday or not, weather permitting, doesn't matter. They will play Friday at the latest, so you'll be fine. Kick off your weekend in style, your holiday weekend if you celebrate. Even if you don't, go celebrate some good baseball. That's it. That's our season preview for the 2024 Philadelphia Phillies. For Matt, I am Paul. I am just about out of breath. We'll catch you next time.